Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hey there, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet one person at a time. And oh my God, let's talk about somebody who's healing the planet one person at a time. We have Susie Plaxton here today, and I'm just so thrilled to have her because she's so much fun, and I have so many points of admiration for her. So I'm sort of like going to try not to crush out too much on Susie. I hope you don't mind if I crush out on you a little bit. But there's like, so this incredible, you know, acting career that you've had. You know, you've really had an incredible acting career. So off Broadway, New York City, improv, comedy. You've been all over Hollywood. So Mad About You, Love and War, Wag the Dog, Dinosaurs, Everybody Loves Raymond, How I Met Your Mother, and my absolute geeky favorite, Star Trek, four episodes, four characters. I mean, like, I don't know, maybe there's more than that. And you've done voiceovers, you've written short stories and poetry, you've recorded an alternative country album. Like, it's
indeed.
I mean, there's all this incredible thing and things that you've done, and that's sort of this beautiful force of creativity that you've been in the world.
Oh,
and sort of the cherry on the sundae here is this incredible novel that you have called The Return of King Lillian. And this is such an incredible book. It's such an unusual book. I don't know if I told you this, but I was a literature major in college. So no. I studied comparative literature. Yeah. It's sort of like this deep love that I have for fable and mythology, which is one of my loves as a literature person. You know, I was like the little kid in school that was like in the library because the books were my best friends.
Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah. And I just,
too.
Yeah. And I just, so like, your book is so incredibly unique and in every way, and it's such a delight. So I'm super happy to talk to you about it. So welcome.
I'm so honored, and thank you so much. And tell me, did you, are you listening? Did you read? Are you reading? Are you listening? How are you?
Well, you know, I bought the book because I like to hold it in my hand and I bring it in the bathtub with me.
I've done that. It's a very disastrous effect.
Yeah, you just dropped it in the bathtub. It's definitely not the person you want to loan your favorite book to. But in this case, I'm like listening to it. So I got it on Audible. And I just think that listening to it, I just want to put a pitch out there to anybody who's ever going to read this, is to listen to it, because you're rendition. So you do the recording, and
yes.
I mean, you're an actor, so, and you're an incredible actor. So all of the voices, all of the sounds, all everybody's accents, it's so fun. It's so fun to listen to. It's so alive.
Oh.
And I just can't imagine, even though I'm sure, I know you're a word girl and you love words, and I'm sure the text is amazing, but I can't believe that it could be as alive as the Audible version that I'm listening to.
Well, you just made my heart sing, truly. Just gave it wings. That makes me so happy. I think that, you know, it was inherent in the birthing, as it were, of this creature, The Return of King Lillian, that it would be something I read. I've always desired to read fairy tales. I've always loved fairy tale and myth. And there's almost nothing that has been quite as exciting as getting into the booth and letting the outer shell fall away and work playing with my collaborator, Kristen Overn, and our engineer, Kevin Cleland, and just playing all these people and telling the story. So it makes me just, I was about to say rabidly happy, but I don't even know if that works together, but so happy I'm frothing at the mouth.
That's awesome. Yeah. So because your book is so unique, tell us a little bit about, I'm just so curious, like, how did this come to you? Tell us a little bit even about what it is and why King? Why King Lillian?
Well, let's do the King thing first, which will tie into how the rest of it came to be. I did not consciously choose the title The Return of King Lillian. I was actually sitting looking at a lap desk that a friend of mine had created that was him testing how to paint a sky. And it was a piece of plywood. And I was using it a lot as a lap desk. And I was staring at it. And you know how when you fall into a very slight sort of a trance-esque state where you're just relaxing as you're staring at something? And I looked at the sky and I saw as if an invisible hand were writing in this gorgeous cursive purple ink, the return of King Lillian. And wow. I burst out laughing. And I burst out laughing in a kind of recognition of, oh my God, this is the title. This is the name of the character. And I had been welcoming in from, let's say, the other side, as it were, from the muse, little dreams and snippets over the years, over a long period of years, and shaking my fist at the sky and saying, this is a really big story and I'm not an author. Why don't you go bother somebody who's like Charles Dickens or Mark Twain? I first had a dream sighting of Lillian and Hank, her horse, when I was in my late 20s in New York City, facing a brick wall in a small apartment, studio apartment of mine, knowing nothing about feng shui at the time. And I had a flash of a dream, like a gift, just a moment of movement in which I saw this woman with long red hair. I did not have red hair at the time, and a sensational scarlet velvet cape and a musketeer, purple velvet musketeer type hat. And she's riding this amazing gleaming chestnut steed up through this cathedral archway of gigantic trees. And the world, the color of this world was like life inside a Maxfield Parrish painting. I mean, it was just saturated and so magical. Wow. And I never forgot it. And then maybe a year later, who knows, could have been 6 months, I don't remember. But I got another little snippet, another little snip of a dream, and another. Not that they ever began to rain down, but what happened was I began to be more and more passionately in love with this world. Mm. And I felt like I had, you believe in that kind of thing, like maybe I'd signed a contract in between lifetimes and said, okay, I've got to bring this thing in. And with not much skill to do it, it just, I began to play with characters and play with ideas and inspired by these dreams.
Well, I think that you are a natural born storyteller.
Oh,
and that storytelling is sort of like an old and sacred art form. It's like an old, you know, process, and it's very connected to myth and fairy tale and legend, right?
Yes, very. Yeah. Yes. You're a writer. You must be a writer.
I am. Yeah.
Of course. You are.
I am. Yeah. I just launched my first book in October. Kelly Sullivan Walden helped me with that. And I'm working on my second.
Kelly Sullivan Walden.
I know, we love her. Just a little love for you, Kelly.
We love Kelly. What's the name of your book?
It's called The Art of Psychic Reiki. And it's about Reiki, because I've been a Reiki teacher for over 20 years. And I'm a psychic. So mostly I work as a psychic. That's kind of my main gig. And I just noticed that teaching people Reiki really will pop open their psychic ability and that they need a training on that. The second book I'm working on is about how to manage our sensitivity if we're super empathic, highly sensitive people.
Can I come to that workshop?
Sure. Yeah. And that one's called Energy Healing for Empaths, and it's coming right along. So
Energy Healing for Empaths. What a good idea. Good for you. So, you know, I don't consider myself, I consider myself a writer because I've written, but I don't actually think of myself as an author.
Well, I think you're a storyteller. I think you're a storyteller.
I just love that.
Comes out of you. Like, if it's going to come out of you written, it's going to come out of you in a dream. It's going to come out of you. And you know, through this method of storytelling, and the medium of that is sort of whatever it is, you know?
You got it. Oh my God.
I also like fell in love with the world too, because the world that Lillian inhabits and the way that you paint the picture of the world is so vivid, and it's so sort of like Earth, but not like Earth, mm-hmm. you know? And it's funny when you are talking about the sky, like looking at the sky, because there's a lot of the sky being important in the story, and a lot of Lillian looking at the sky is sort of her finding her reference for herself in this world.
So, yes. I'm sorry. I want to just hear you talk the rest of the time. It's making me so happy what you're saying. I love it. It's just making me so happy.
And it's such a powerful thing. I think so. I don't want to give too much away, but I think, you know, Lillian like loses her memory, you know, and has to go on this journey to find herself. Right. Mm-hmm. It's sort of, this is the big, remember who she is.
Yes.
And as I was reading it, I mean, listening to it, it's had these sort of really powerful elements of like we all do that. We all forget who we are, and we all have to, you know, find our way home, and we all have to, you know, find our sovereignty. So she's even a king, you know, and that was beautiful. And I just wondered, like, is she you? Is that an allegory for you?
Well, that's a grand question. You know, I suppose that she must be on some level. However, I think that I keep calling her the Return of King Lillian an art creature, just in my own vernacular. I think that that it's bigger than me, and that it's always been bigger than me, and that she may be, when I've seen her in dreams, for example, she may look like me, but she's not me. It's very clear that she's not me. Maybe, you know, it's some deep Walter Mitty kind of desire to be someone like Lillian. But I think that this myth has come through me with its own personality and its own mind and its own right. definition of Lillian. Yeah.
Kind of like having a child, you have a baby and it came through you, but it isn't you. It's part
yes.
of you.
Oh yes, 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 including yeah. labor pains.
Oh yeah.
Except this one gestated for about 30 years. So.
Wow.
Yes, very long time. Very long time.
And you have some really, like, I know you have the theme of animals and magic and magical beings. What's that like? What how does that weave in for you as important?
Well, I think that there's something in me that's a little bit of a transcendentalist. If you think about Thoreau or Emerson, those feelings of the divine throughout nature, the divine throughout animals, and all of us, all of it being sacred, is something that just came along with the whole of Lillian's soul. I think she sees and experiences nature and animals, of course, being part of nature, everything. I think she feels that the divine is running through everything. I think she probably says it again.
And it's so interesting too about there's this deer that sort of shows up and helps her along her path. And if you study shamanism and understand the power animals, the deer always plays that role. It's like,
wow, really?
Yes.
Oh, how, you know? Cool.
Right. Yeah. So in a male deer is called a hart. And throughout mythology, there's this story of the warrior getting led off their path on the hunt and finding this mystical deer. So the warrior has to follow their heart, and this leads them into a magical realm where they're transformed.
Wow.
Just saying. It's like,
wow.
Yeah. So I think you're tapping. Now I wondered if you knew that, or if you're just,
I didn't, I'm my jaw is dropped and may not come back again for a little while hearing that. No, that's so, you know, I think that as I hear you say that, and when I said, I feel like this has always been bigger than me, the way that I drank in myth and fairy tale when I was a child. And yet I also somehow ingested the notion, or let's say had trouble digesting the notion, that it was usually involving this heroic male.
Right.
And that I felt that, and as I grew, I felt that that a lot of the archetypes were quite flat. Mm-hmm. And when you say that it's usually a male deer, and of course in the story,
it's she's a female.
It's a doe, right? Yeah. And that was absolutely not conscious in any way.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
And I think that, you know, I love what you said about archetypes, because we're really used to the hero's journey. Joseph Campbell really did that. And so many storytellers have taken the hero's journey and done it very well, you know, with all right up to Star Wars as being sort of like the right. modern hero's journey that we all so resonate with.
Right.
And I think that the story of Lillian is so interesting. And it's sort of the female, the Shiro's journey instead of the hero's journey. Because she doesn't fight, you know, she doesn't fight. She learns, she relates, she solves problems. And the encounters that she has with the various people, instead of fighting them, killing them, yeah, whatever,
right,
coming into an adversarial relationship, she learns something.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I love that you're saying that. I mean, I remember I was talking to some Star Trek folk whom I have deep and great affection for. And I was saying, listen, I don't know if this is going to be your thing, because Lillian is not a warrior. She's a philosopher.
Right.
And it amongst other things, of course. And yeah, I mean, she wanders through, I think, as many of us wander through this world. We're not always wandering through with our dukes up and our swords out, for sure.
Right. And she has her companion, the book. And I just love it that she calls the book and talks to the book. And she's like, you know, book, I just have to tell you, book. It's so cute. It's
nice.
It's so cute. And it, I mean, as a narrative device, it's fantastic too, but I think it's just so endearing to, like, she's quite introspective, you know? So I think she's using that book for self-reflection, her journal for self-reflection. And I'm definitely going to start calling my journal book from now on.
Lisa, I love that. Well, I can't think of anything more wonderful. That got me a little teary. That's just wonderful.
So I love that. And she really has this, like, introspection. So things happen and then she reflects about it in her book, and that's where her learning is going. And I just can sort of feel her going on this journey that by the end she is going to be sovereign, the king, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where are you? I'm mentally wondering where you are at the moment.
I'm in Boston, just outside.
No. Much as I love Boston, no. Sorry, I meant in the book.
Oh, in the book.
I'm so sorry. Know,
I'm about halfway through, I think. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You've got a ways to go.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you no matter what when you're done, when you're all the way done.
We gotta go all the way through.
Oh, please.
I'm just slow like delight. Like, it's like, I don't know where we're going next, but it's such a delight.
Well, I love hearing that. And I also know someone asked me, what did you think, what I thought the difference between a regular hero's journey or the known hero's journey, and why we call it the, you know, a new hero's journey. And one of the things is, I think it is more about the journey than it is about the destination. It all ties together in the end, for sure. But it is a more, let's say, spiral or zigzag. It's not a Roman road of a journey. It's not like the gun goes off and bam, you just got to get there, and you can't wait till you get there, and you got to get to the end. It's much more like life. It's long and winding.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And I think it's interesting, you know, we were talking in our pre-show conversation about Star Trek and how, you know, how me and the two guys that are crewing for our radio station today are we're huge Star Trek geeks and fans, and they were I was like guys, check this out, she's been on Star Trek, and they were like, what, you know, they had to look you all up and look at pictures of you and everything.
It was,
and
like four different aliens, I think it was four,
four different aliens. So we had such a fun conversation about that, and I know you said that you have a strong fan base in the Star Trek community and that this book has been something very divergent from that. It's very, yes, very different animal than
Yes, I think that, and you know, we gravitate towards what we gravitate towards, and whatever resonates with us resonates. And I think that by and large, the sci-fi community, the sci-fi fantasy community that will love Doctor Who and Star Trek and Lord of the Rings and things like that, which are wonderful and formidable, they are not what this is. This is, I would say, and, you know, throw in your own comp books, if you will, but closer to, let's say, even maybe The Alchemist, or some people have said Alice in Wonderland, a little bit Princess Bride,
Princess Bride, Neverending Story. Those were.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, the Princess Bride and Neverending Story were really my comparisons, but it's very hard to compare this book to anything because it's not really like any other book that I've read or the story that I've listened to.
From a literature major, yes.
Right? I know.
Made my year.
And I totally had a side thing in myth and fable and legend, so I read a lot of that stuff, and I've read a lot of fantasy, so it's a little more like fantasy rather than science fiction. And even inside the fantasy genre, it's a bit genre breaking, this book. It doesn't really, it sort of feels like its own. It's sort of like you created a new genre.
Well,
I
don't know, you'll get another sentence out of me after that. You've just completely humbled me and thrilled me to my core.
I mean, it's very true. It's very unlike anything. And I could really, like, you know, feel that's probably the way it wanted to come through you.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, because Lillian is a bit more, let's say, eccentric on the page than it is on the stage, the audiobook, you know, you just hear it all go by. When you see it, there have been people who, thank goodness, there are people who really dig in and like it. And then there are people who are kind of allergic to it because of the way Lillian talks. It doesn't, because she speaks in that sort of peculiar, some might say, particular sort of semi-colloquial, odd way. And I have to say that, for example, was something that, yes, just came through. There was, in all the years that I'd had all these different files of notes and characters and things, and at some point I had a file, and we're talking paper files. That's how very long ago it was. And I pulled out this paper file, and there was, inspired by a dream, there were about 16 pages that were written first person by Lillian. And she always talked like that. And there was never any other choice but to have her speak like that. And some of that may come from the fact that I'm an actor before I'm other things. And so I may sense or feel a character in their own particular vernacular first. And, you know, I was, as I was working with my old college buddy, Kristen Overn, who's been the midwife of this, shall we say, and I would go over to her house with a chapter and read it. And at some point, I think it was about six or seven chapters in, she called me on the phone. She said, you know, I mean, the thing is that Lillian does all of these interesting things with her verbs. And I said, really? What do you mean? And I had, you know, barely spoken the word verb since I was somewhere in middle school. And I was almost not aware of it.
Yeah, she does have her own language, and it's sort of an old fashioned language. It feels like it harkens back to, like, I don't know, the mid 1800s, or it has that kind of.
Oh, nice. Yes.
I'm just wondering, sadly, we're almost out of time here, and I want to give people an opportunity to find Lillian and to find you if they want to know more about it.
That would be fantastic. Well, let's talk about Lillian first. They can go to www.kinglillian.com, and they can listen to excerpts, read some excerpts. If they'd like to, they can sign up for the first few chapters free and see if it's their kind of thing, and they can find out where to buy it on kinglillian.com. And anything else they'd want to know more about me, I'm at suzieplakson.com, SuziePlakson.com.
Great. And I got it on Amazon, and I wanted to put a pitch in for the Audible version, because it's just spectacular.
Oh, thank you so much. That just, yeah, you're making my soul take wing, Lisa, I swear. Thank you so much.
Thank you, honey. Suzie, thank you so much for writing this amazing book, and thank you for being on the show with me today.
Well, I couldn't have been more honored or thrilled, truly, truly.
Thank you
so much. Bye, everybody.
Bye, and thanks all of you guys for joining us here. You can find me at lisacampion.com. Come on by and visit me. I got some stuff going on, cool stuff happening on my website. And we're just so happy that you're here with us on The Miracle of Healing, where we are healing the planet one person at a time right here on Empower Radio.